Roundtable Podcasts, underwritten by Proctors, the Capital Region's premier performing arts center featuring the best in entertainment from Broadway and around the globe. Proctors.org.
American audiences have fallen in love with JoJo Moyes ever since she debuted stateside. She has captivated readers and reviewers alike and hit the New York Times bestseller list with the word-of-mouth sensation Me Before You. Now with One Plus One, she's written another contemporary opposites attract love story. It tells the tale of Jess Thomas, a single mother and house cleaner in a southern England seaside town, and the thrown-together relationship she develops with one of her clients, the wealthy, hopelessly geeky Ed Nichols. Also, the paperback edition of JoJo Moyes' Me Before You has been on the New York Times list for nearly a year. It's a great pleasure to welcome JoJo Moyes to the Roundtable. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
It is a delight to have you here and to talk about the new book. What brought you to this particular subject matter? Because this is a road story.
I love a road story. You see, I've always wanted to write one, and I tend to write each book almost in reaction to the last. So the last book I wrote, The Girl You Left Behind, was a kind of huge wartime epic that started in the First World War and had a kind of enormous cast of characters. And so once I finished that, I wanted to write something that was really just a tight little drama, quite lighthearted. And I suddenly thought, what better way to fulfill my ambition to write a road trip than to do it now?
And it has, I guess it's your style of a road trip in the sense of it's fraught with disaster, sort of from the onset.
Yeah, well, you know, anybody who's got a family knows that the idea of being in a car and going out for a long drive is often so much better than the reality.
Right.
You know, I can think of times I've said to my family, let's go and have a day out by the seaside. And, you know, you pack the car with a picnic and you get everybody together. And then within half an hour, you're not singing songs and kind of looking forward to empty roads. What you're doing is clearing up someone's spilt drink, or, you know, someone's complained that they've sat on a chocolate bar and it's all rubbed into the upholstery. Someone else needs to stop to go to the ladies' room. And I just like that sense of the chaos that comes when you have groups of variables like kids and dogs in a car that you can't actually control the chaos.
There is this, you look at, your novels are very funny. They have a wonderful wry sense of humor to them. There is there's always a wonderful story, a lovely love story in play. But also you tackle social issues as well. And I assume that's a conscious choice at the beginning of the process.
Oh, very much so. You know, I think you can be, for want of a better expression, a commercial fiction writer and still cover some serious issues. You know, I often think that people find it easier to read about tough topics if you just introduce a little humor and leaven it a bit. I mean, you know, who has the best jokes? The emergency services have the best jokes because they are the people who deal with life and death every day and they figured out how to kind of live with it. So, yeah, I think it's important, even if you're not writing kind of heavyweight literary fiction, to just reflect the world that we live in as well.
In reflecting that world that we live in, do you want to always be in a family setting, in a relationship setting in your books? Is that comfortable ground for you?
I guess it's the world that I know. I mean, I think it's a really useful source of human relationships and tension. I mean, I always say that you could sit me down in a room with any one or two people and I could get one or two novels out of them, because we all have families where the inexplicable happens, where there are secrets, where there are relatives who do not behave well, where there are tension between two people that somebody doesn't understand. And so I feel like you don't actually have to look too far beyond that setting to get a really good story.
The characters are wonderful, although I have to say in this novel, you had me with Norman. Norman is the dog, and in some ways, I guess, is really the hero of the book.
Well, yeah, you know, I have been astonished by people's reactions to Norman because I deliberately did not set out to write Lassie. You know, I did not set out to write the gorgeous, clever, intelligent, empathetic dog who saves the day. What I did was write a great, big, hairy, slobbering, not very nice smelling dog who refuses to take instruction, who just basically his idea of a relationship is just to roll over and wait for someone to tickle his tummy. But as you say, he does something heroic later on in the book. And I guess I just, again, wanted to write a dog that reflected most dogs I know, for example, my own dog, which, frankly, only his family could love.
Well, I was going to say that is, I think, probably why so many people have reacted the way they have reacted to the dog character, is because it's, you know, it's the dog we all have. You wish he would have better manners in front of others, but they don't, and you accept them for who they are and what they are and what they bring to your family.
And you love them anyway.
Absolutely.
Well, you know, the thing that has really interested me with this is I didn't realize quite how seriously readers took their fictional animals until I go on Twitter quite a lot. And I was writing a key scene with Norman where something terrible happens to him. And I was just about to go to bed. It was about 11 o'clock at night. And I just happened to tweet, just trying to work out whether to kill the dog before I went to bed. I turned my phone off and I went to bed, and I woke up the next morning and there must have been 100 messages coming back to me going, do not kill the dog. And I was looking at these messages thinking, A, this is a book you haven't read. B, this is a fictional dog. You know, he's not a real dog. And then something weird happened. I was reading The Goldfinch recently,
yes.
You know, which I believe has had a huge success over here.
Donna Tartt.
And
right.
I found myself getting really anxious about the fate of a little dog called Popchick in
right.
the story. And I suddenly realized, you know, it doesn't matter if they're fictional. Like all characters in a book, they become real to you, and you do get anxious about them. So I have huge sympathy, and I'm not going to tell you what happens to Norman, but yeah, you don't need to be afraid to read the book.
Well, no, absolutely, and it seems as though when you have characters like that, I find myself much more concerned about the welfare of a dog or a cat than I do of a human. You know, if one of the main characters was to perish, I would feel bad, but I don't think I would be as emotionally invested for whatever reason.
That's so true. Do you know, just today, I can tell you I got an Amazon review, and I do read them. I don't believe any writers who say they don't read them. And this woman said in this review, I have to tell you not to buy this book. I read 75% of it, and there is such animal cruelty that I refuse to finish it. And I'm kind of breathless because I think, well, you didn't read what happens to Norman.
Right.
But every reader's right to stop reading, and this lady decided she'd read enough.
I think that, I certainly don't see it as cruelty. I mean, it's a story, and it's what happens. I guess to that sort of criticism, to talk about that, does that spook you in the sense of, when writing about a character again and you read something like that and you read one person's reaction, let's face it, I mean, we're all human. You read 500 people that tell you that they love your stuff, and then you read that one that says it's horrible, and that's the one that sticks with you till the end of time. So does that have an impact in some way?
You're absolutely right that that's the one that sticks with you. But if it's just somebody criticizing the fact that they think something happens to a dog that actually didn't happen,
right.
then I don't feel obliged
you can
to
rationalize,
take that one too seriously.
Yeah.
But I have learned from my online reviewers, because in my early books, I got a lot of reviews that said something along the lines of, I loved this book, but I nearly didn't finish it because it took so long to get going. And I thought, well, if one person says that, that's an opinion. But if 50% of your readers are saying it, then you're taking too long to get going. So in the last few books, I kind of made a conscious effort to actually speed things up a little at the start. And interestingly enough, I don't get that criticism anymore. So, you know, no matter how sensitive your feelings are as a writer, I do think we have things that we can learn from our reviewers, not just the kind of serious newspaper kind, but just ordinary readers can help you with your writing.
Tell us a little bit about this character in the book, Jess Thomas, who is a single mother, a house cleaner, living in England, and just trying to make things work out.
Well, yeah, I wanted to write a book with a mother who was not a problem. I kept reading mothers in fiction and realizing that they are either kind of horrible and overbearing and kind of cloth-eared like Mrs. Bennet in Pride and Prejudice, or they're dead. You know, most fairy tales begin with a dead mother.
Right.
Harry Potter has a dead mother. The Goldfinch has a dead mother. So I just really wanted to write a book that had a positive image of a mother, even if she was not what we would, you know, not a kind of Walton-style mum who presides over a lovely nuclear family where everything is as it should be. But I wanted to kind of reflect that quiet heroism of the mum who is just battling on day after day to do the right thing by her kids, keep food on the table, keep everybody happy, and sometimes doing it on their own. So I also wanted to show a mum who does not necessarily have a problematic relationship with her kids. You know, in so much TV and film, we see the mum who is kind of arguing with the teenagers or slamming a door or just, you know,
right. Exasperated.
And actually, that's just not always the case. Sometimes it's just a much stronger, more positive relationship. And I wanted their relationship not to be the difficult thing in this book. You know, it's the stresses that the family face that are the difficult things, not the relationship within the family.
And don't you think that may be a key to why you have struck a chord with so many readers, is because there isn't that inherent friction?
I hope so. I mean, you know, I never know what makes a book successful. I used to joke that Me Before You was going to be the book that finished my career, and actually, you know, it turned out to be the book that made it.
Right.
I just try and I do two things. One is I try to reflect the messiness of real life. You know, I think often with commercial fiction especially, writers can tend to write what they think people should talk like or how a relationship should be. And I kind of enjoy trying to get to the grittiness and the messiness of how people actually speak to each other and treat each other. But also, I guess I just try to not do bad in my writing, if that makes any sense. I try to reflect young women especially who do the right thing and are resourceful and clever and perhaps aren't fixated on their appearance or how they look or what they buy. You know, you won't find a designer handbag in my books because that's just not the world that interests me. And I just try to imagine, if my daughter, who is 16, read this book, what message would she take from it? And it's not, you know, go out and buy a pair of designer heels and your life will be better.
The book is delightful. It is 1+1. It is out from Viking. And, of course, Me Before You is out in paperback and still on the New York Times bestseller list. Jojo Moyes, it's always a great pleasure to speak with you. Thank you so much for being with us, and best of luck. Have a great
summer.
Thank
you so much for having me.
Thank you. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.